Good evening. This is George Herman of CBS Radio News, recording in Washington. The Army-McCarthy hearings moved through another day with very little in the line of fireworks today. The members of the subcommittee had few questions to ask, and most of them were brief questions and received brief answers. The committee counsel had virtually no questions, and Senator McCarthy had only a few and a few points of order. So Army counsels Welch and St. Clair moved rapidly through their cross-examination of McCarthy aide Francis Carr. Late in the afternoon session, they finished with Carr, and McCarthy's chief counsel, Roy Cohn, took the stand. Welch had already indicated that he would ask no further questions of Cohn. There were a few by Senator McClellan, and then Cohn, too, was finished. Tomorrow, Senator McCarthy goes back on the stand, and there are a few early predictions that if things continue this smoothly, the hearings may be over tomorrow night. Now, here for the details of today's hearings is Griffin Bancroft.
The day started with further cross-examination of Carr by the assistant Army lawyer, James St. Clair. He asked about some conversations Carr had with Army Counsel John Adams. Then some of the senators questioned Carr, although on the whole, the senators, especially the Republicans, were unusually quiet today. When it came McCarthy's first time to speak, he referred to his blow-up yesterday with Democratic Senator Symington, saying communists sometimes use unknowing megaphones. But most of the day was devoted to alternate cross-examination of Carr by St. Clair and his chief, Joseph Welch. At one point, Welch pressed Carr about lists of informants he and McCarthy might have. Then Welch suddenly turned to another line of questioning, the coddling of communists.
Now, Mr. Carr, to turn to another subject for a moment. And speaking of communists, the one group of people, or the one arm of this government that has literally fought communism with blood and with steel, is the Army in Korea, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
There's no doubt about all of us being proud of that act on the part of our Army.
Not in the least, sir.
And, of course, nobody could think that was coddling communists, could they?
No, sir.
And isn't it just incredible to you, Mr. Carr, just simply incredible to you that anybody in the Army should actually coddle communists?
It would be incredible to
just
me.
Just incredible.
Yes,
at least we can agree on that one. And you don't want to sit in that chair and have anybody in this country think for a moment that you believe the United States Army coddles communists, do you?
I don't think the United States Army coddles communists.
Thank you, sir.
At this
I
time.
Knew you would say that.
I would like to have completed, though, sir.
Well, would you like to qualify now?
I don't want to qualify.
Wouldn't you rather just have it simply that way?
No, I'd rather say it my way, if you don't mind.
Well, I'll let you say it your way, provided you say it nicely, sir, to the effect that the United States Army does not coddle communists. Is that what you'd like to tell us in your own words?
No, not exactly that. I'm in agreement with you, Mr. Welch.
Well, if you are, can't we move along?
No.
I think he kind of wants to put a qualification on it that I don't think he ought to really want to put on.
Mr. Welch, will you let the
Mr. Carr, do you want to add something to what seemed to me so clear and so fresh and so nice?
No, sir. I would just like to say that I don't think that at this time the Army is coddling communists. I think that the Army has gone to a great extent. I shouldn't say the Army. I apologize for saying that. I think that Mr. Stevens and Mr. Adams went to great limits to prevent the exposure of persons who had cleared communists. I don't say that that's necessarily coddling communists.
No, what you're talking about there is the loyalty board deal,
isn't
it?
That's correct. That's correct.
After this, St. Clair took over the cross-examination again, discussing the night Cohn, Carr, and Adams went to a prize fight together in New York. Republican Senator Dirksen of Illinois and Welch then had an inconclusive debate about the right of Congress to get information from the executive branch of the government. Then it came St. Clair's turn again. He questioned Carr about Adams's cooperation with the committee and the use of words like hostage and blackmail. St. Clair started like this.
I'm not sure in my mind whether, at least insofar as the hostage
language is concerned, your testimony is that it was facetious or not. Perhaps you could tell me, did you consider it facetious?
The use of the term hostage by Mr. Adams was on many occasions facetious. It might have been at this time.
It might have been at this time?
Might have been.
Would you have written a memorandum about it, sir, if it was facetious?
I wrote the memorandum about the other statement.
Well, it also includes something about hostage, doesn't it?
Well, it includes the fact that we had been, I think, to a hearing. It includes many things, but the reason
sure.
I wrote it was this other statement.
Sure. You don't mean to suggest that you wrote a memorandum about a facetious remark made by Mr. Adams, do you?
No, of course not.
It was serious, wasn't it?
No. Now, the reason I wrote this memorandum
no,
is
I mean
about another
threat.
Remark by Mr. Adams.
All right. But insofar as the question of hostage is concerned, he was serious, wasn't he? As you know.
Yes. He was serious.
Well,
he's been serious on several times. Other times he's been facetious. It's hard to tell when which is which sometimes.
Well, he certainly wasn't very cooperative with you or the staff on December 9, was he?
No, I don't think he was being cooperative, no, sir.
No. And you wrote it was so bad that you wrote a memorandum to Senator McCarthy about it, didn't you?
That's right.
And when did you write it, sir?
The same day.
The same day.
I might say that he was perhaps trying to be cooperative. If we wanted to cooperate with him, yes, sir.
Would you read me that answer? I didn't quite understand it.
Reporter, read the answer. Answer, I might say that he was perhaps trying to be cooperative as we wanted to cooperate with him, yes.
Do you mean
if we wanted to cooperate? If we wanted
to. Do you mean to suggest, Mr. Carr, that while he, as you said, tried to blackmail you, he was also being cooperative?
No, I say you might put the interpretation on it that he was trying to be cooperative with us if we wanted to play ball with him, yes. He was making an offer. He said, "What's there in it for us?"
Well, you didn't accept the offer, did you?
That's right.
So he was not cooperative, was
he? No, but it was a try.
It was a try.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't result in cooperation, did it?
No, sir, not in that respect.
Not in any respect on that day, did it?
That's substantially correct.
You know, sir, that about a week later, the senator stated for the public record that Mr. Stevens and those who are now in charge, which would include Mr. Adams, had fully cooperated with the committee. You know that, don't you?
Yes, sir, I do.
Do you consider that the information you gave to the senator on December the 9th is consistent with his statement in the public record on December the 15th?
I don't know that it's consistent with it, no.
You
I know
consider
that
it highly inconsistent, don't you?
It's inconsistent with it, yes. Inconsistent with my memorandum, yes.
Sure, and the information you imparted to him.
That's correct.
And the information you'd been imparting to him since October the 9th.
That's correct.
Were you present when the chairman, Senator McCarthy, made that statement for the public record?
I don't know what.
I was just going to ask Mr. St. Clair, could you give me the documentation on that?
Yes, it's now in the record at page 5841.
I don't know whether I was present. I might very well have been. I might say, and I think maybe I could save a little time by saying it now, that Senator McCarthy, when I gave him this memorandum, after he'd seen this memorandum and I'd spoken to him, he thought that I was overly disturbed by this situation. He thought that I was perhaps too disturbed by this, and that Adams might not have meant what I thought he meant.
Well, now, Mr. Adams was sent by you, as you testified, to see Senator McCarthy that same day, namely December 9.
Well, I wouldn't say sent. I suggested
Well, you suggested
go,
he
right?
might go see the senator.
Right, that's right.
And you know that he did go see the senator.
Yes, I know that.
Sure. Now, are you suggesting that the senator didn't quite believe your memorandum?
No. I'm suggesting only that the senator was not as disturbed about the situation as I was.
I see. You have no doubt in any event, though, Mr. Carr, but that Senator McCarthy, when he stated for the public record on December the 15th that he'd had full cooperation, he meant what he said.
I have no doubt that I don't know what he meant.
Well, you don't suggest that he didn't mean it, do you, Mr. Carr?
He said it. The record speaks for itself, I guess.
Well, you don't want all these people to understand the senator speaks for the public record and not mean it, do you?
No, I don't. I want you to ask the senator what he means when he says that.
Perhaps we will, Mr. Carr. But insofar as you're concerned, I just want to get it established that the chairman, as of December 15th, stated there had been full cooperation.
Well, all right. He probably...
And that you consider that inconsistent with your memorandum that you say you wrote on December the 9th.
I consider it inconsistent with my memorandum, yes, sir.
That's right.
Immediately after this, Democratic Senator McClellan of Arkansas took over the questioning of Carr. He started out by saying he had been criticized for using some expressions and said he would like to discuss another term, one used by McCarthy. McClellan began.
Mr. Carr, I'd been using the word coddling communist, and apparently there was some objection to it. Let's take up another term now that has been used to describe situations that's not in the charges, and that is holding a razor blade at the jugular vein of this nation. I believe you agreed with Senator McCarthy with his application of that term to those to whom he referred in his questions while ago, did you?
Well, he had some pretty long questions, but I will agree that the communists, and especially those strategically placed in defense industry, in government, and in other places, do hold, in effect, a razor blade at the throat of the nation.
All right, we'll agree on that. Now let's go a little further and see if you agree on this. Do you agree that if your charges are true, that Mr. Adams and Ms. Secretary Stevens, in protecting communists who have infiltrated, using your language, are also holding a razor blade over the jugular vein of this nation?
Could I have the reporter read that? I want to hear that.
Reporter, read the question.
I can restate it.
Yes, question.
You want me to restate it?
If you wish. Yes.
You have agreed that individual communists working in defense plants or who have infiltrated hold a razor blade over the jugular vein of this nation. If your charges are true with respect to Secretary Stevens and Mr. Adams, that they have been protecting those who have infiltrated, those communists, would you also agree with me that they are holding a razor blade over the jugular vein of this nation?
Well,
sir?
Well, let me put it this way, sir. I wouldn't say that they, I think the communists are the ones that would be holding the razor blade at the jugular vein of the
they're
nation.
They're protecting the blade.
Well, I would just say that, our charges or statement being what it is, they're not rushing to pull the razor away.
They're not rushing to pull it away. They're protecting the razor then.
That's the best I can say.
All right, thank you. That's all.
Democratic Senator Jackson of Washington was up next. He questioned Carr about the trip to Fort Dix with Secretary Stevens. Carr said, "I just went along for the ride." Now here again is George Herman.
The high point of the morning session, in warmth at least, was still to come. It was to be provided by Senator McCarthy discussing the subject of Korea, China, and the movement of war material in Asia, issues which he put strongly to Mr. Carr, who usually answered in a monosyllabic single syllable, yes. In just a moment, you'll hear how Senator McCarthy built on this foundation, but first, please stay tuned as we pause exactly 30 seconds now for station identification. This is the CBS Radio Network. This is George Herman in Washington again. One odd footnote here. There was a brief and strange phenomenon during the morning session. A good three-quarters of the press photographers and reporters suddenly rose and hurried from the room to the astonishment of the subcommittee and the witnesses. There had been a report that a madman with a gun was being sidetracked away from the hearings. Turned out he was a crank looking for something entirely different, and the glare of publicity returned in full force to the hearings and Senator McCarthy. Here is Griffin Bancroft to tell you what it showed.
It came Senator McCarthy's turn for 10 minutes of questioning, and he used it to explain that while he had been criticized for his use of the term treason in discussing the last administration, he wasn't sure that it was too strong a word. McCarthy listed what he called 5 incidents of treason, questioning Carr this way.
Mr. Carr, when we are talking about investigating, we have here a sequence of statements made not 20 years ago, not 10 years ago, in the very recent past. A statement made by General Lowe to the effect that because General MacArthur was hamstrung and brought down, we had to write off tens of thousands of casualties. The statement by President Eisenhower that until he took office, our 7th Fleet was being used as the protective arm of the Communist Party. The statement by General Van Fleet that we could have captured all of the heavy equipment and 200,000 or 300,000 of the enemy if politicians in Washington had not stopped him. The testimony of General Ridgway to the effect that the ammunition shortage, when the piles of ammunition ran low, the number of corpses piled high. The testimony of Ambassador Bullitt to the effect that by order of our government, the bullets were being shipped by Formosa, being used to kill American boys. Now, I have referred to that, Mr. Carr, as treason. I'm not going to ask you to say how you would define it, but I hear Mr. Welch and individuals here talking about the importance of secrecy, whether or not the American people can know what's going on. You and I know, Mr. Carr, that if individuals were in the government responsible for the 5 different incidents which I have just related to you, and if all of the information is stamped secret, we have no way on earth of knowing whether they are still there, whether they are still holding important jobs, and the only way we can determine whether or not the individuals responsible for these, what I call 5 incidents of treason, the only way we can find out whether they are still holding positions of power is that we have access freely to information, except, of course, anything which would give out the names of informants, which would endanger the security of this nation. And do you agree with me, Mr. Carr, that we get down to this? It is important beyond words that when we get through with this hearing, that somehow, some way, we work out with this administration a formula whereby we can get the names, the American people can see the faces of the individuals responsible for, as Lowe says, the deaths or tens of thousands of casualties of America.
I think that we and the people have the right to know, and I think it's important that we some policy is worked out on that line, yes, sir.
Mr. Carr, can you think of any reason why the old Truman Blackout Order of 1948 should be maintained in effect as of 1954?
No, sir.
And just one further question. If our committee is to perform its function, it is imperative, is it not, that every blackout order, regardless of whether it's Truman's or anyone else's, be canceled instanter?
I think that's correct, sir.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
There followed some intensive and detailed cross-examination of Carr by St. Clair, mostly about conversations he had with Adams and Cohn regarding Private David Shine, and the committee adjourned for lunch. After the noon recess, St. Clair went on with his cross-examination until Welch again took over. He asked about memos Carr had written, particularly one dated December 9th. Welch asked,
"Your first paragraph of that memorandum
has these words in it. I want to tell you that I am getting fed up with the way the Army is trying to use Shine as a hostage to pressure us to stop our hearings on the Army. You observe those words, that I am getting fed up, Mr. Carr?
Yes, sir.
I take it that that means that this pressure to use Shine as a hostage had been going on for some time, had it not?
Yes, it probably does.
You wouldn't use the phrase, I am getting fed up with something, unless it's something that had been going on so long you were getting sick of it. Is that right?
That's probably correct, sir.
So that you had been undergoing this rather nauseating situation for, shall we say, days?
No.
Weeks?
No.
Months?
No, I wouldn't... I don't know whether I'd say days, weeks, or months.
Well, which would you choose? Hours?
No.
Days?
No.
Weeks?
No.
Well, you better choose something. How long does it take you to get fed up on something of this sort?
Well, it took me about, I would say, an hour and a half to realize how fed up I was on this. Mr. Adams told me this after the hearings. Outside of room 101 at that time. I don't recall challenging Mr. Adams or saying anything to him that would even indicate that I later would write this memorandum. But as I kept thinking about it and thinking about it, when I was in the office, I began to get fed up. I think I got fed up in a matter of... about an hour, maybe
well,
2 hours.
Well, then perhaps I gave you two large words every time. Maybe it was a matter of minutes. Is that right?
It could have been.
Could have been minutes. Now, I told him the only contact we were authorized to have with him about Shine was on Investigations Committee business. You see that phrase?
Yes, sir.
Who authorized your contact?
Wait a minute, I said I saw the phrase. I don't see it yet.
It's the end of the second paragraph. I told him the only contact we were authorized to have with him about Shine was on Investigations Committee business. My question is, who authorized that contact?
I think Senator McCarthy and Secretary Stevens.
Well, certainly the Senator had.
And the Secretary had, yes.
Now, look at this phrase, and you've already been asked about it in the next paragraph. I am convinced that they will keep right on trying to blackmail us as long as Shine is in the Army. Were you so convinced?
Yes, sir, I was at the time.
Did you know what Mr. Shine's tour of duty was going to be?
At that time?
Yes.
No,
Didn't you know it was going to be 2 years?
Oh, yes, in tour of duty, yes.
So you were then convinced that you were in for 2 years of blackmail, is that right?
That's what I said here, yes.
That's what you say, is that right?
I don't know that I thought of it in terms of 2 years, but I said as long
as
he's in the Army.
Well, you say as long as he's in the Army.
That's right, yeah. And he's in the Army for 2 years, yes.
And you were in for it then? For 2 years of blackmail.
That's the way I felt that afternoon, yes.
Yeah. Now, just what was the blackmail? What were they threatening you with? Just to keep Shine in the Army?
No, sir.
Well, to put him on KP?
No, sir.
Or deprive him of a leave?
No, sir.
Or not make him a corporal?
No, sir.
Well, what were they threatening to do to him?
Well, the way I understood it, and the thing that... got me a little bit angered that afternoon was the fact that they tied this thing in with stopping the hearings with...
I don't care what they tied it in with. What were they going to do to Shine?
What were they going to do to Shine?
Yes.
The thing that I was concerned about here was, sir, that they were trying to use Shine to stop the herring.
I understand, but what were they threatening to do to him besides letting him wear the uniform of the United States Army?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that they were threatening to take him out and shoot him or anything like that, sir.
No. I don't think so. The worst we've heard is KP on Sunday, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
That's the worst we've heard.
Right.
Carr was finally excused from the witness stand, and McCarthy's chief counsel, Roy Cohn, was called to complete his testimony. He was asked a few questions by Senator McClellan about the work Schein had done for the committee, and then was allowed to make a concluding statement. He ended it this way.
And the concluding part of what I want to say before I leave the stand is about two people with whom I've been closely associated in this cause during the last year. And those two people are Frank Carr and Senator Joe McCarthy. As far as Frank Carr is concerned, his record has been well stated here. He came to this committee. The night before he came, he was the head, the supervisor of over 200 of the top FBI agents in this country. He produced with them the evidence which put in jail the first string and the second string leaders of the communist conspiracy in this nation. He has been made to sit here, sir, for some 2 months now, on the basis of completely unfounded and unsubstantiated charges against him. And my final word, sir, and one which I must make before I leave the stand, is about a man who, to me, is a great American, and that is Senator Joe McCarthy. I did not know Senator McCarthy before I came with this committee. I am of a different religion. I am of a different political party from both him and from Mr. Carr. In the year that we have worked together, there has never been any distinction because of religion, political affiliation, or anything else. I have never known a man who has less unkindness, less lack of charity in his heart and soul than Senator McCarthy, and I have never known a man who has been more loyal and devoted to his staff and to everybody associated with him in this cause than Senator McCarthy. I've seen him sit here for over 2 months now, virtually as a defendant. I've seen him waive his senatorial immunity. I've seen him examined and cross-examined on the witness stand. I've seen him work day and night on other things all of that time. And I have seen what this has meant to his wife, to those near and dear to him, and to those near and dear to Mr. Carr. I think they have been badly treated in having to sit here when their only crime has been that of doing their level best to protect this nation against a menace of communist infiltration. I think that they have been badly treated in sitting here, but I think that their reward comes in what I know is the gratitude of the American people to two men who have given so much to keep this nation safe against communist infiltration. Thank you, Mr.
Cohn was then excused and the day ended. And here again is George Herman.
While the hearing was moving through its deliberate paces in the caucus room of the Senate office building, there was debate on the Senate floor over the Flanders motion to remove McCarthy from the chairmanship of his two important committees. Finally, with the approval of Senator Flanders, the motion was sent to the Senate Rules Committee, which is headed by McCarthy's good friend, Senator Jenner, and which numbers McCarthy himself among its members. Flanders says he'll offer a new substitute motion if the Rules Committee does not take satisfactory action by mid-July. In the meantime, he says the public might think that Fifth Amendment communists are paralleled by Fifth Amendment senators. The hearings resume tomorrow, just possibly for the last time, possibly for the next to the last, and CBS Radio News will once again bring you recorded highlights tomorrow evening at 10 o'clock Eastern Time. George Herman recording. This is the CBS Radio Network.